Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. You know, it has been so long since we've had a discussion about Buddhism here on Common Threads. It just hit me a few weeks ago, and we've been doing so much because religion is in the news, on the political scene, and in the social scene, and I thought, you know something? We've got to get a Buddhist in here to give us an update on Buddhist culture here in the United States. And I thought of the perfect person, a good friend of mine here in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And her name is Shuji Valdine Mintzmyer. And she is an ordained Dharma-transmitted Soto Zen Buddhist priest in the Katagiri lineage. She first began her Buddhist practice over 35 years ago and was ordained in 2011. She is trained at Mount Shasta, California, in Oregon, in Iowa, and in Fresno, California. She holds a BA in Fine Art and Economics with a minor in Asian Studies and a Master's in Business from the University of Nebraska. A Master Tailor, Shuji is one of only a few Buddhist priests to create traditional Soto Zen Buddhist priest garments. Shuji has been an entrepreneur most of her professional career. Presently, she is the sole proprietor of Zen Monkwear, a business providing monastic priest garments to international clergy and lay practitioners. Reverend Shuji is currently the head teacher in the Soto Zen Buddhist group Just Sit, right here in Grand Rapids, and also she has a tremendous presence in the Interfaith Network here in Western Michigan. She has been a part of the Interfaith Dialogue Association Speakers Bureau for several years now, and whenever Shuji speaks somewhere, I get rave reviews. Her knowledge of Buddhism is ecumenical and expansive. So welcome to Common Threads, Shuji.
Great to be here.
Why don't we start a little bit about you? Let's talk about your spiritual journey, and then we'll talk about the various issues that I've been thinking about over the last couple of weeks. Okay. So how did you begin? I suspect with a name like Mintzmyer, you weren't born into a Buddhist family.
I was born into a good German Lutheran family. And at some point, I think in high school, I started not feeling like the Lutheran Church was, it wasn't meeting my needs. So being in the early 80s, I got into, I'll say the earthy, crunchy, New Age religions. And I really liked that, and that felt good. But I started noticing that people were going off on their own a lot and getting into things that they didn't know what they were doing. And I read Alan Watts' The Watercourse Way. And it talked about Buddhism as being going like the water. Just if a rock gets in your way, move aside. And that book made me really angry. I thought, what is it? You know, it seemed awfully passive. And then I went backpacking in Vancouver, BC. And I went to a waterfall. And they had this huge waterfall called Bridal Falls. And I was met with a sign saying, warning, pedestrian lookout is closed. And I went and I thought, oh, the waterfall didn't like that pedestrian lookout, so it wiped it out. And I noticed on top of the waterfall, there was this huge V where the water had eaten away the cliff. And at the bottom of the cliff, these huge stones. And it's like, oh, the watercourse way can be really powerful too. And then something clicked right then. And I started looking at Buddhism as a spiritual path. And what attracted me was you had to get training to become a Buddhist priest. I couldn't just announce to the world, okay, I'm a high priestess in the Wiccan faith. It's like, as a lot of people I knew were doing, it's like,
is that right?
You have no idea what you're talking about. And I kind of liked the way Buddhism had tradition behind it.
Yes.
And there are some really strong Wiccans that do very well. And that part of my life is still very important in my faith right now. But I am a Buddhist, but I still bring a lot of that into my Buddhism.
We've had conversations on this program with other people who have talked about the fact that they came from something that was somewhat nebulous. Oftentimes, mm-hmm. as with you, they start with something that has a very strong tradition, such as your Lutheran Christianity, mm-hmm. and then they move into something because maybe they don't like organization, and they get into, you know, unorganization. And then they see that they might be missing something. And as you say, some people thrive in absolutely no organization whatsoever, but some people, yeah, they kind of like it. Like a little bit of, they appreciate that what they are doing has a lineage. It goes back. It's yes. time-tested, apparently.
Yes.
And so this seems to be what happened to you as well. I mean, but you said that what attracted you was, well, you have to train to be a Buddhist priest.
There was a lot more than that attracted me.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, yeah. It wasn't like, why, Buddhism is for me and I'll be a priest.
No. I'll go back to the idea of water. You put water in a cup, it takes the shape of a cup. You know, a lot of Buddhist symbology works with water. You know, you can't grab hold of water. You can't take a handful of water. And that's the whole idea of non-clinging. As soon as you try to grab water, your hands are empty. The way that water can be soft and malleable, but it can also be powerful and strong. You can have too much water and flood. You can have not enough water and drought. My spiritual practice is trying to find that middle way, that balance, the balance between very structured spiritual practice and the free-willing, let's go dance naked under the moonlight, which is somewhere between there is where I want to be.
Understand.
Yeah, which is interesting because Soto Zen, the thing of the type of Zen I practice, the type of Buddhism I practice, it has its roots in the samurai culture. So it is like, it is one of the most rigid Buddhists.
It has a martial ambiance, if you will.
Yes, and within that practice, I'm trying to find that balance of, okay, where does a water flow in this? Where can the flow fit with the very, I'll say sometimes harsh, for non-Buddhists to read about Soto Zen, they go, wow. They read about time in Soto Zen monasteries, and it's like, ooh, that's awful. It's like, no, there's a balance there. There's peace and harmony within that.
I have conversations with a lot of people in the interfaith world, and obviously you do as well. And I think that there is this misunderstanding that Eastern paths, not just Buddhism, but Taoism, Hinduism, Sikhism, all of the Asian religions, there's this this misunderstanding that they are passive. As you said, you mm-hmm. thought Buddhism was very passive, and they think that, well, you know, if you're from the East, then you got to be Gandhi, right? The idea of, as you say, this particular iteration of Buddhism descending from samurai culture, right? To a lot of people, that doesn't make sense. But there really is a military, a martial, it would be a better word. There is a martial spirit to Buddhism that people don't always acknowledge or understand. So talk a little bit more about that.
That's really hard to put into words. But since we're on the radio, I can't see my hand gestures. I'll try to use words better than my hands.
You can still use the hands. Use the hands. Just don't.
The hands are going.
Yeah, the hands are going. That's great. I'll describe as you. No.
Just go ahead. There is. I don't want to say peace, but there's some sort of feeling of relaxation with the rules. The founder of Soto Zen, A.A. Dogen, wrote The Rules of the Monastery. And you read those and you think, oh my goodness. But it's like you sit in the monastery, when the bell rings, you all turn to your right and stand up and bow. And, well, you get into a crowded monastery and you suddenly realize it's nice to all turn to the right at the same time, because otherwise you're bumping into knees, because we sit on cushions and we sit fairly close. It's like, oh, a lot of his rules are how to live comfortably in a small space with a lot of people. And rules on how to get up, how to wash your face, how to brush your teeth, how to use the toilet.
Is that right?
Yes. And part of that is, at the time, rural Japan of 1200, a lot of people were sending their young sons to the monastery because there wasn't anything else for them to do. It was more of a occupation than a spiritual. And it's like, we have all these kids coming that don't know how to brush their teeth. So let's have a rule. You get up, you wash your face, and you go by seniority, so everybody's not running into the bathroom at the same time. And you hang your clothes on a hook, because otherwise you're going to have a bunch of 16-year-old boys throwing towels on the floor. And then the next ones that come in will have to step over the towels. It's all part of how to live in peace and harmony.
But so these are the kinds of rules that perhaps aren't necessary for today. I mean, you don't have to abide by those rules in your home.
One of my students read it and he said, can't I use a toothbrush? Do I have to use a stick? Because Dogen gives explanations on how long to chew your stick before you can use it as a toothbrush. I said, no, you don't have to use a stick. We have toothpaste. We have toothbrush. Feel free to use a toothbrush.
Right.
But there's other rules. Like he has one of his things, rules to the head cook, how to handle your food. And every time I wash my rice, he gives rules on how to wash rice. Wash it 3 times, and you treat every grain of rice as your eyeball. Respect the food. Somebody worked hard to get that food to my table.
Of course.
And by disrespecting that food, I am disrespecting the rice growers, the people in the plant packaging the rice, the grocery store that I bought the rice from, and myself and my partner who work hard to get money to buy that. And then you can go into how that grain of rice, everybody in the earth is working towards bringing that rice. So by respecting that rice, you respect everyone. And just...
Sure. So it's simply a matter of using common sense.
Yes.
For instance, I remember seeing someone on television who was Muslim, and they were talking about people who take the Quran literally. And the person was saying, well, you know, the Quran, I have to think about this. It was either Quran or the Hadith, the sayings of the Prophet. So one of the two, but, you know, something that the Muslims would take seriously. They said that after using the bathroom, or whatever they used for a bathroom back then, to clean yourself with 3 smooth stones. Well, as you would advise the student, we do not need a stick anymore.
Yeah.
Toothbrushes are fine. Charmin beats 3 smooth stones any day of the week.
Yes.
So, yeah.
And even though when I make my rice, I think of Dogen saying, treat every grain of rice with the eyeballs. If something happened that would, like if a glass broke and started throwing stuff at my face, and I could either drop my pot of rice and shed my eyes or keep my rice and lose my sight, I would probably drop the rice and protect my eyes.
Well, you're a lousy Buddhist, for crying out loud.
You're and off it's of like my show. You have to use your brain.
Of course you do. There are so many denominations, movements, sects of yes. Buddhism. What is it about the Soto tradition that attracted you? Why aren't you a Tibetan? Why aren't you a Sri Lankan Theravadan? All of those choices you could have made, and you made this one.
Yeah, one of the things about Buddhism is every place that Buddhism moves to, it absorbs its dominant society. And I grew up, I'll say old-fashioned German Lutherans, because I think the Lutheran Church has changed a lot in the last 40 years. And in some ways, Soto Zen has something like my old Lutheran church as a child. And in that same way of rules, and I, you know, and it's almost. It's comfortable for
the structure.
Me.
I understand
The structure, mm-hmm. the rules. We chant the same thing all the time, and in Lutheran Church, we had our hymnal. We the first 17 pages we do every week, and we didn't have to.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today is Reverend Shuji Valdin Mintzmyer, and we're talking about Buddhism. Please continue. You say that you sang the first
like 17 pages of the hymnal was the same every week, but it's more than just the liturgy. It's something. It's like a similar taste.
Like what?
A similar taste.
Sure.
And I've always. Loved Japanese art, Japanese dance. When I got into Japanese spirituality, it just felt like home.
And you also have an experience in Korean Buddhism, correct?
Very little. Very little. Korean, going down the different types of Buddhism can be a real rabbit hole that I get lost in. But Korean Buddhism is also Zen, you know, so there's a real familiarity. The Chinese Buddhism, there's a lot of Zen. Japan is more of a Shinto Buddhist. And last year when I was in Japan, I went to a lot of Shinto shrines and a few ceremonies. I was like, yes, this feels like home. And it's just...
But now Shintoism, my understanding is Shinto is separate from Buddhism.
Shinto is separate from Buddhism.
But
when I walk into a Shinto shrine in Japan, in northern rural Japan, and say, hi, I'm a Soto Zen priest from the United States, they are very happy to see me and we talk like old friends. And it's just like, oh, welcome. And they want to show me their temples and explain what they're doing. And it's like a cousin that they'll welcome into.
Sure.
And since I'm a female from the United States, I'm like an exotic cousin. They want to get to know and talk to. So it doesn't feel that different on the surface in an interesting way.
And from what I understand, I have a cousin who lives in Japan. And his wife is Japanese. Mm-hmm. And from what he said, people use both religions. They sort of swing both ways. So if you're going to get married, you go to a Shinto shrine. Am I correct? Does that make sense?
I don't know enough about Japanese practices to...
Okay. That personally they may be Buddhist, but when it comes to certain occasions in their life, they need to go to a Shinto shrine.
What it kind of, I went hiking in Nepal once, and they had things that I couldn't figure out if they were Hindu or Buddhist. And I asked their guide, is that a Buddhist temple or a Hindu? And he'd just kind of shrug and walk away. And a few days later, I read in my guidebook, only the uninformed tourist will try to distinguish Hinduism from Buddhism in Nepal.
Yeah, right.
Okay. And I almost feel that's what it's like in Japan with Shinto and Buddhism. Even though they do separate themselves,
yes,
I'm Shinto, I'm Buddhist, it's a pretty loose separation when it comes right down to it.
Understand. And you don't want to spend a whole lot of brain cells in trying to separate this Gordian knot, so to speak, right?
There are some real external things, like Shinto people will put something on their door frames, a really pretty knot, that Buddhists don't. But it's like, well, I don't know, that hardly makes a big change. And Shinto people will wear bells on their backpacks or on their, you know, so they walk around with bells. But as I'm up in northern Japan, Shinto country, it's also bear country. And all over the place, it's like, put on your bear bells. So it's like, are they really evil spirit bells or are they bear bells?
Sure.
And, you know, so I'm walking around with, you know, the Shinto spirit bells on my backpack. That has nothing to do with religion. It's just because there's bear.
Sure.
when we're hiking. So it's real. It's not clear cut. And I kind of like that.
I get that, absolutely.
Yeah.
Is Buddhism, I get this impression, tell me if I'm wrong, I get the impression that Buddhism is very ecumenical. That is to say, within the Buddhist tradition, not interfaith, they're interfaith too, but right now let's just talk about ecumenical. So for instance, if you were to go to Sri Lanka and sit with the Theravadins, if you were to go to Dharamsala, and sit with the Tibetans or whatnot. Is there a free flow of thought and participation, or is it like Christianity used to be most of the time, and now it only is some of the time, meaning that a Lutheran can now go to a Presbyterian church and not have to feel that they're, being disloyal or something?
I will say there's layers on that. And this is, I'll say, is only as much as I know, and this isn't part of my deep knowledge here.
Sure.
Especially in the United States, I can go to any Buddhist temple and I'm welcomed. And the basic teachings of the Buddha are there everywhere. And they're pretty open to other people coming, other Buddhists coming and taking part in their celebrations and their services. Then I think when you get a little bit more, I'll say, intellectual about it, there gets to be some deeper discussions.
Yeah, debate.
About what it means. And a lot of that is because every place that Buddhism goes, they take on its the country of their adopted country's
traditions, yeah, sure,
beliefs, that suddenly you get some real cultural differences, and it's more the difference between Japanese and Tibetans than Japanese Buddhists and Tibetan Buddhists. And as Buddhism comes to the United States, there's getting to be a real unique Western Buddhism that is getting more and more different than the countries where they originated. The Tibetan Buddhism is becoming less Tibetan and more Western. The Japanese Buddhism, less Japanese and more Western. And in a big way that has taken root is, I think, every Western Buddhist now ordains women.
And that is not true in
that
all the other countries.
Not true in all the other countries.
Well, there you
so,
go. Right.
Yeah.
Right. We have had a variety of teachers from all of these different traditions come to the United States. And a couple of them, and don't ask me for names because none is coming to mind, but you have this rather dubious tradition called crazy wisdom, where some of the teachers acted in very outlandish ways, and that may even be going on today. Is that a real Buddhist tradition, or is that just something that somebody made up one time so they could, if they were men, they could just get a lot of ladies or drink a lot of whiskey?
That's, I'll say, a hard, touchy subject right now. One of the largest Buddhist communities right now, it's hitting the news that there are improprieties by one of the leaders.
And let me stop you right there as you are deep in thought, because I just got the signal we are down to the wire for this week.
Okay.
But I'm dying to hear more of what you're saying, and I'm going to remember this question for the next week.
It'll give me time to ponder how to answer it kindly.
Good. Wonderful. Well, Shuji, it's been delightful to have you.
And it's been delightful to speak.
Wonderful. So I've been speaking with Reverend Shuji Valdin Mintzmyer. She is the head teacher of the Soto Zen Buddhist group Just Sit right here in Grand Rapids, Michigan. My name is Fred Stella. This is Common Threads, and you're listening to WGVU.